Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome back to Mads World. I'm your host Mads and I hope you've been enjoying the show so far. If you have, please remember to subscribe, rate and review the podcast as it's the simplest way to help out the show, or find me on social media and tell all your friends about it. This week I'm joined by psychologist, TV presenter, writer and expert media commentator Emma Kenny. Emma is recognised as one of the UK's leading TV psychological experts. She is perhaps best known for her role as resident therapist and agony aunt on ITV's This Morning, where during the viewer phone-in segment of the show, she provides expert advice on a whole range of sensitive issues. A regular voice on the airwaves too, Emma provides expert opinion on many radio stations including BBC, Heart, Magic and many of the popular stations across the globe. Emma is featured on popular podcasts including Russell Brand's Under the Skin and True Geordie. Contributing regularly to editorial for publications including Grazia and Cosmopolitan, Emma's weekly column and On the Couch therapy sessions are also a popular feature in Closer magazine. Emma has been working with Plenty of Fish on some research aiming to flip the narrative on ghosting so single people can explore the silver lining of ghosting. The research shows that singles save 9 days every year from being ghosted. 54% actually welcome being ghosted. Singles are using the time to invest in themselves, including practicing more self-care and prioritizing relationships with family and friends. 56% of people are choosing to reflect positively on the times they've been ghosted, and 47% of Brits would raise a toast to their ghost. In this episode, we discuss how mental health impacts our dating experiences, how self-esteem and mental health are intertwined, how handling ghosting appropriately can be seen as a positive tool for self-preservation, communication techniques and strategies, viewing ghosting as an opportunity, and how ghosting can be seen as a healthy option. Hello, Emma.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for jumping on the pod. I'm super excited to chat with you all about ghosting and dating behaviours. But before we do, I was hoping we could chat through the speed date question round so everyone listening can learn a little bit more about you.
Okay, cool.
Amazing. So, first question, I love this question because it can go any direction. What is your favourite pop culture moment ever?
I mean, for me, probably pop culture is a lot older than it would be for you. So I guess for me on a personal level, it would be like making it always on the guest list of Inspiral Carpets in Manchester, where Manchester was just becoming like the cool Britannia. So yep. I guess for me, the whole cool Britannia would be, but then I instantly say that and then think, no, because I did used to go to Affleck's Palace to try to have my hair cut where Johnny Marr went from the Smiths. So I don't know.
Sick.
But the main thing would be the 90s and 80s, like, booming Manchester, because it's never been the same. So that would be it, yeah. Before it went all hipster.
I feel like we're kindred spirits in that. Like, you seem like a rock and roll girly, which is very much up my street. I'm actually going to a festival on Friday. I'm seeing Sam Fender, Foles, I'm seeing The Killers, I'm seeing 1975.
Amazing.
And I'm like,
amazing.
Oh, I'm just going to be living my
life. Oh, is that Leeds or Reading?
It's Reading, yeah. So I'm going with a mate from NME, which will be so fun. And I'm like, oh, I just want to live my little, like, emo hipster dream.
Amazing.
I'm so excited.
See, I'm mates with Denise Welsh, who's actually the mother of Matty. So I always feel like when he and Taylor Smith got together.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift, sorry, got together.
Swift,
I was
just
like, what?
It's so
crazy. I literally texted, I was like, now I just feel like I actually know Taylor Swift.
So funny. He's a Manchester boy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And he's really, really culturally aware. He's hilarious. And also, I watched him on a recent interview about Oasis, and was just saying, yeah. Well, sort it out, lads.
My God, I did see that. Yeah. Do you know what? I feel like my whole TikTok algorithm is just focused around weird stuff that Matty Healy does.
I love it. He's hilarious, though.
I can't tell if what he's doing is all part of a bit, but he knows what he's doing.
He's always going viral. He just doesn't have time for the BS. I like that. I like people who don't have time for the BS and just says what he thinks. And I love the fact that I know his mum, which is just makes me feel 100 years old. Not that that makes her 100 years old, but you know somebody's kid and like really, you don't know the kid, but you know who they are really well. And they're like a grown adult. And you're like, how do I know anybody who's got a child who's a grown adult?
Yeah,
I'm still 25 in my head, you know?
Oh, mate, same. I mean, I turned 30 the other week and then I actually did my back on Friday. Like, I bent over to fake tan my legs, stood up and fell over, and I was like, is this my life now? Like,
this does happen. After 30, basically, it's just a hill downwards and like little slight movements whilst ironing can land you in hospital. That's the reality.
It's so bad. And I'm like, okay, well, when I go to Reading, I'm not moshing. I'm going to be standing at the back.
I'm super impressed.
Fist bumping. Oh, I've been resting so hard. So I'm like, nothing's going to stop me living my little English.
No, I'm super impressed. My youngest son has gone to Leeds. So he's at Leeds. He's gone for the early entry today. So obviously you get the same in Reading, but just the other way around. And I am very envious, very envious. Of course, he's going in the glamping as opposed to the camping because he doesn't want to get his tent nicked or something, because that happens every year. Whenever I went to festivals, every year you'd end up without your tent. So he's out there now, no doubt, going to be enjoying what you're enjoying.
Oh, how fun. I can't wait. You should speak to Denise and try and come on Saturday. You can see Matty in all his glory.
I should do, really. I'm really bad at that stuff. I don't take advantage of any of my contacts. I need to listen to you more and do that.
My next question is, I'm super buzzing to chat to you about this. How did your career as a psychologist lead to working with This Morning as the agony aunt sort of progress? Like, how did that start and how did that happen?
So when I was a kid, I had two main desires. One desire was to write for a magazine called Just 17 that doesn't exist anymore. And the other one was to be an agony aunt on TV. And at the time, obviously, This Morning was iconic for that. And I ended up writing for Closer magazine as their agony aunt. And then over the years, from starting in TV, God, like 15, 16 years ago, I started with the BBC. I did a 20-parter for the BBC and I didn't understand anything about TV. It was just like a comedy psychology show. It was just basically me playing tricks on the public, which was brilliant because like I'm really mischievous. So it was the perfect job. But I didn't really want to be in TV. I'd done some work for somebody on an ethics project, ended up documentary to do with that. I didn't realise people moved around in TV. So I got this opportunity to go and do something a little bit left field. And I thought, you know what? I'm running projects. I'm doing all this kind of really high level psychological, you know, social work as well. It wasn't just psychological. It was to do with like crime and young people who have really difficult lives. And it was great and I loved it. But it's also quite a taxing job, you know, and also the wins aren't that big and that's okay. But it was tough in that respect. So getting to just go and do 3 months filming in London and basically doing things like pretending I was cutting your hair to get you to say I was a great hairdresser when really I hadn't been cutting your hair, or doing your makeup and painting your face red and then getting you to be nice to me because I was just so lovely and you didn't want to complain, just to prove these psychological things from the past. I did that. And then I just got options. So I got asked to go on. It was then Good Morning TV. So it was back in the day. Then it was Daybreak. And then it became Good Morning Britain. And in between that, because I was working with ITV there, I started to do the phone in. And that was, I just embedded myself there and was like, well, I'm not going to leave. I don't do it now. I've stopped doing it recently because I'm doing my theatre tour and I've got other things that I do with my time. Mm-hmm. But honestly, they were the two greatest achievements. It's so hilarious when I look back at that. The fact that writing for a magazine is an agony aunt and being on the phone and answering the world's problems in 2 minutes was like this is what I want to achieve in my life. But I've always been one of those people that I don't think necessarily reaching for the stars is for everybody. And for me, I had this comfortable way of just like thinking, God, that'd be enough to just get that option, to be able to do that. And having done it, it's an incredible privilege, really. I really, really enjoyed those years. 13 years I did it in total, you know, from the very first one through to being contracted with them for a good few years. And it's something that I'll go to sleep one day for my last time thinking, oh, I'm so glad I managed to do those few things. Because you also don't realise where those dreams are going to take you. you know, you aim for a particular place, you reach it, and then you don't know how that's going to play out. And it's funny because it plays out in a very different way a lot of the time. I've never wanted to be super successful in TV. Actually, I find the whole media area quite challenging, like a lot of people do. But it's something that I think on an iconic level for myself as that little working class kid who really wasn't that great academically at school and all the things that kind of you have to work harder to get as far as you do. To have got there, I'm like, that's really funny. It makes me giggle now when I look back and think, how did I do it? How did I end up there? And you ask me how, and I just think it's a series of luck and being nice to people.
That's the thing. It's all relationships, isn't it? Like it, with anything, absolutely. It's sort of like, and it's not like when people say it's not what you know, it's who you know. I think that's true to an extent. But then it's also like you could know everyone. You can be an absolute asshole. And it's like, well, that's not going to get you anywhere, is it? It's like it's about building those relationships and making connections with people. And also like on a personal level, not just like, not just like a, you know, a fake networky kind of level. Like if you're actually can connect with people, then that's like having charisma is such a massive, massive, gives you a massive step up.
I think in the media, it's absolutely who you know if you're not very good, but it's what you know otherwise and 100%. What you do with that. So I do think there are two schools. So there's definitely that kind of more narcissistic nepotism side of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the actually people who are talented and I know which side I'd rather be on.
For sure.
That makes sense.
You mentioned in there that you felt that that was some of your greatest achievements, but what else would you say is your greatest achievements, like just in life in general, like speaking beyond career?
Oh, my children are my greatest achievement, full stop. So there's nothing that compares to my children. Like it was definitely the best thing I ever did. They made me a much better human being, and hands down, if there was only one thing I could do with my life, I'd be a mother.
And so you've recently just had another baby. Congratulations.
I've had Etta Blue. She's amazing. So that took ages though. Like my boys were both fertility babies, but they were fertility drugs babies.
No way.
Which made it easier. But then the other has been IVF. And then that's been lots of miscarriages and lots of failed situations which happens a lot. Well, you know what? At least it exists. You don't always get a great outcome in life and that's okay. So she's just the most profound little gift.
Oh.
And I'm getting to do it all again. So obviously, like I feel 23 now because amazing. I just think to myself, I've got all the fun to come.
Yeah.
But it's been a massive blessing. And I hid my pregnancy the entire time because I was too scared to let anybody know in case it went wrong again. So I literally did go into labor.
Yeah.
2 weeks early, just after I'd finished my tour for the summer. And genuinely at the end of it was like, oh, my sister said, you can't keep her a secret anymore because you're gonna have her with you. And it was the first time I'd kind of acknowledged it because she was here. So I'm very, very lucky. But that's my best achievement. My greatest achievement is that. And then I would say anything of my mental health work. I'm patron and ambassador of two different charities. So that matters. And I'm quite hands-on. So I'm not somebody who puts my name to things. I kind of do the work as well. So mental health is a big area for me. And it always will be from career to personal. So it's really, really big part of my life.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you've had such an amazing career. What's something that you've recently learned to do, or what's something new that you've learned that you didn't know before? Because I feel like when you have such a broad career like you do and so much experience and you're working with loads of different people all the time, there's always opportunities to learn new stuff. And like we were saying earlier, TikTok, I feel like, is just teaching you all this stuff all the time. So, what's something new that you've learned?
I mean, I genuinely go through life thinking I know nothing, and I like that. I don't think I'm an expert at anything. I think I'm constantly learning and constantly growing. And I think that when you let go of ego, that's a really powerful experience to think I'm just basically a primary school student my entire life. You know, everything I'm in wonder at. You know, I got a bread making machine. I'm in wonder at it because it takes so much less time and I just throw things in. The learning and growing is different directions. So some of it is like I was just making a joke about the bread making machine, but it's good because it teaches you a shortcut that everything doesn't have to be too difficult in life. And then on the bigger spectrum, I guess standing on a theatre in front of a few thousand people doing a show, which is something that is totally left field for me and out of my comfort zone, but then realising that sometimes those opportunities you're invited to are things that help to remind you that just as you don't know very much about the world, you also don't know that much about yourself. And because in therapeutic world, which is the one I come from, we're constantly talking about self-actualization. Self-actualization is basically that constant working towards the full knowledge of who we are. And I kind of think that that's ego-led as well, because at the end of the day, what it's confirmed is that even though I think I know myself, and even though we've spent a lot of years developing that and going to clinical supervision with your therapeutic practice and working with lots of clients and working with yourself, really when it comes down to it, you know very little about who you are. And the more that you put yourself into situations that are deeply uncomfortable, often the more you realise that it's the idea of discomfort that prevents us from doing things of meaning, as opposed to the actual experience of placing yourself and building up a tolerance to that. So they're the extremes. On one, a bread maker, which is talking about shortcuts. And on the second, really putting himself in a position of fear.
Yeah.
Because you do things because at the time you're presented with opportunities that sometimes come from hardship. And certainly for me, I think that during COVID and all the things associated with that, I had to make some really difficult decisions. And those difficult decisions led to some real positive outcomes. So again, like I say, it's been a culmination in the past few years of a great deal of new knowledge. And I think surprises me every single day, just like I said, how little I knew.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, as we learn about ourselves, as we get older and move through life, and, you know, do you think that it's ever possible to be completely self-aware and completely remove your own ego? Or do you think it's because that, you know, we're always changing, that there's always something new to learn because you're a new person every day?
Yeah, I think everybody should give up the idea that they're going to know themselves. And it deeply concerns me when somebody says, I really know myself, because I'm like, you aren't even like, touching the surface, you know, and that's a great thing. But I also think there's a massive pressure. And I think particularly on women, to act like they've got everything together. And I think that in Western society as well, there's a big emphasis on this is success, this is failure, this is what things are meant to look like. And letting go of those is the most powerfully helpful situation that you can bring yourself towards. Because when you finally can just acknowledge that, first of all, you're never going to know very much about anything. And isn't that the beauty of being alive? Like, there's a finite time period on this earth, on this planet, but you've got to be here within that finite period. And the breath of consciousness is a blink of an eye. You're here and you're gone and you'll be forgotten. And it's a beautiful vulnerability that you're going to be forgotten. Not initially, people will remember you and love you and think about you. But, you know, three generations down the line, you're not even going to be somebody on picture or a mental picture, you're gone. And I think that that's really beautiful, because it teaches you that just like your knowledge is ever changing and growing, we're all ever changing and growing. I think that you can work hard to know as much about yourself as you have the time to learn, and that's a good thing. But I also think that that pressure to know the self, to know who we are, to know what we want. Well, I don't want what I wanted 5 years ago now. I used to think that being on the phone in this morning was like the pinnacle of my career, like that could never get better, and now it's just something that I don't even consider an interest of mine because I have different interests. But if you'd firmly asked me then, I'd have been like, this is it. And I also think that once you let go of that desire to try to find the this is it, and instead of just like an ever-evolving motion of just acceptance and also suffering and all the things that go hand in hand with life, then you stop trying to put emphasis on stuff as opposed to on experience. Stuff is kind of really transient, isn't it? Experience is something that's really beautiful and profound.
Stays with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved what you said there. It was kind of like the yin and yang idea that nothing is 100% bad and nothing's 100% good. And you can look at like the two sides of one coin with any experience. Like, I suppose the whole like no one's going to remember you ideology is like, you could, that can scare you, or it can just be like, oh great, doesn't matter, like that I did that embarrassing weird thing yesterday, like no one is gonna care. So
true, that's exactly it. That's that is the beauty of it. The beauty of it is, why do I get so strung up and hung up on these things that essentially no one's gonna care about, and it will have a zero impact on the world? And it's so sad that I think that we're brought up with this philosophy of caring deeply about what other people think, as opposed to caring profoundly about what we experience and what our lives become, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like you can, if you lean too much into the nihilism side of things, you can get quite depressed as well.
Right.
Oh, God, nothing matters. Like, why am I may as well just lay in bed all day and do absolutely nothing. But it's like finding that balance, you know,
finding
walking that tightrope of the yin and yang. And that leads us nicely into what we're going to speak about later in regards to flipping the narrative on ghosting.
Before we
get into that, I would love to know, what is your funniest date story? Because I bet you've got some rippers.
Do you know, I've had the funniest one
is
a toss-up, but I guess I'd go for... I used to be a hunt sav, which is, I'm really into animal rights. So a hunt sav is somebody who used to disrupt the hunt when they used to have legal hunts, right?
Okay.
So I would go out with a group of animal rights, peaceful protests, very peaceful protests.
Oh, wow.
And we would basically wreck the hunt. We wouldn't allow the fox to get caught. And this particular day, this van opened up because it was very like, you know, you met at certain places, you met other groups of savs and things, and this... like van opened up and this guy, and I just remember thinking, well, he's gorgeous. And anyway, we kind of like connected on that particular day and got on. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this could be the man who I marry one day. You know, I was only like 21, but I was like, this is it. You know, this is that moment. He's tall, dark, handsome, really rough. I like a rough and ready looking guy, really tall and all that. And then he kind of invited me out on a date that evening. Yeah. I thought, this is it. This is it. It's brilliant. Yeah. And there were a few things that on that date kind of started to go wrong. Like, first of all, he cleaned himself up considerably and didn't really look like the guy that I'd met in the fact that he wore very grown-up clothes, which freaked me out. But then
what's grown-up clothes? What does that mean?
Like, very coordinated. There was quite a lot of beige. That's one of the things I remember. And that's not what he looked like in his army pants and his massive mod jacket. And then the date, which obviously I'm not hoping for masses. I'm only 21 at the time. So obviously I'm thinking your husband material will probably go, I don't know, to some fast food restaurant. That'll be okay. You know, it'll be fine.
You're 21. It's a vibe.
He took me to a games arcade.
Oh.
As in like genuinely like at the end of a pier games arcade. And that I was trying to fundamentally rationalize was still okay. Because, you know, games have two player. But not the one he played all night. That just had one player. And I literally stood
What, you watched him play
a
game?
I watched this guy
play
a game all night. And I think that looking back, there was still something about my desire for perseverance. I did carry on seeing him for a short period afterwards leaving the country. I did leave the country after that and went traveling for a while and didn't respond to any of his letters. But the point was, you know, when you kind of like, there it was, the universe providing this perfect male specimen, you know, gorgeous, really beautiful to look at, looked exactly as I imagined in that rough and ready moment, and then just decayed throughout the experience. And I mean, I've always fundamentally hated game playing, to be honest, and that I think is probably where the aversion really began. So that was not great. That was not a great experience.
Not a great one, but at least it's all worked out now.
It has, but I'm still quite disappointed that that didn't end up being the incredible story it would have been had the ending been a better one. You know,
the one that
van door swung open, the man of my dreams was there, and it all worked out beautifully, and here's our seven children. But no. Never mind.
It never does.
No!
So that leads me really well into our discussion about ghosting. And you've been working really closely with Plenty of Fish, all about ghosting and doing some research there. Traditionally, people view ghosting as quite a negative behavior when dating. But could you share some examples of where you would say that ghosting can actually be a positive behavior when it comes to dating?
Yeah, like you said, I think one of the big things that worries people about dating is ghosting. And I think it is still a really prevalent behaviour, don't get me wrong. I think it's one of the dating nastiest to some degree. But I actually find ghosting really helpful for lots of reasons. So first of all, I do think that people need shortcuts to understand the kind of individual that they're connecting with. If somebody isn't brave enough to have a conversation with you or to keep in contact with you to a point where they no longer wish to have that contact and to let you know about that, that's an absolute shortcut to your time not being wasted. So for me, cutting that kind of relationship means you're one stage closer to the person that you're going to end up with. So essentially, they have stopped wasting your time. And I cannot, for the moment in my head, work out why anybody would want their time wasted more. Yes, it might feel a little bit painful or hurtful initially, but first of all, you get used to that. So, you know, you grow a real resilience to pain. You're like, ah, oh, there you go. That's happened again.
Yeah.
And instead of internalizing it and being like, what have I done wrong? It's more of going to yourself, well, these things happen. That person's not for me. I wouldn't want somebody with that personality in my lifestyle. The same is when you do some internal gazing. So let's just say you do get ghosted and you think to yourself, okay, well, this has happened a few times now. What can I learn from that? So sometimes you can reflect and say, well, maybe I need to think about the fact that I give too much initially and I can hold back and that's okay. Maybe I should make them do more work. Again, that's positive because you're kind of reframing the situation. And I think that ghosting very much is about an opportunity to say to yourself, what do I expect and what do I deserve in relationships? And nobody deserves to be treated like that. And nobody wishes to be with a coward. And that's what ghosting is. Essentially, it's either to do with being very rude, no one wants to be with a rude person, or it's to do with being a coward and I can't have grown-up conversations. So who wants to date that kind of individual anyway? So ghosting is positive because essentially it shows you a shortcut into the actual reality of somebody's willingness to act in a way that's totally unfair. And that would be positive to use to your advantage. Same as even when it comes down to your own connections, when you get into the situation of talking to a new person, new partner who's potentially going to be in your life, you should be having those conversations early on and saying, you know, that you don't want them to ghost you. You'd rather have that difficult conversation. You can use it to your advantage, use it as collateral, as opposed to being afraid. So many people are so scared that they're the person that's done something wrong and that's why that person's no longer chatting to them. But the truth is, people of a certain nature will just do things without considering your feelings. It's not a you thing. It's definitely a them thing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, and when you can realize those red flags early on, like you said, it just saves you time. Like if you can recognize and learn to recognize those behaviors early on, then I suppose it helps you on your journey to finding what it is you're looking for in your dating life.
Yeah, and also if you are somebody who has got ghosted and you feel really in pain because of that, then that's giving you some real insight into needing to work on your own feelings and having a bit of time and space for you. Like the truth is, these days, we've never had a better digital landscape. That's honestly the position that we're in. You have access to people all over the UK, all over the world if you want it. You can have these conversations. You can grow your insight into other relationships. You can connect with people in so many different ways, and that is amazing. But the cost of that is sometimes the consequence of feeling bruised. Now, if you feel consistently bruised and you're not working on that, that's a little bit of a push and message that you need to work on your confidence, and you need to figure out strategies so that you can soothe that pain. So I also think that when you're having the negative effects of ghosting and you're actually feeling that and it's painful, that's another message to you that's positive, because it's saying to you, okay, like what needs to change about you and your psyche so that you can handle this very at times disposable world. And once you've mastered that, return to it in a way that means that you're more resilient and more capable of dealing with the pain. Because the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune will exist no matter what.
And I think there's some really good insights on self-esteem and mental health there that you just shared. Could you share any more about how self-esteem and mental health are intertwined and how those things can affect our dating choices?
I mean, I think that self-esteem and having a positive self-esteem and self-worth, self-value, they are integral to every experience in our life. So a relationship is always about what you're willing to put up with. Some people get really lucky, and people do get lucky. They meet the most incredible human beings who treat them like glass their entire life and raise them up and protect them and do all these things. And they've just had the luck of the draw. But for most mere mortals, we give out an energy, and that energy is going to be received by others and reflected. So if we are walking around feeling terrible about who we are, feeling unattractive, not being our best, most positive soothsayer, I suppose, and our most confidence coach, the problem is that we're going to end up having that reflected. So if you are relating to yourself badly, then other people will likely reflect to you in a way that is less than they would to somebody who felt fantastic about themselves. We create boundaries. And those boundaries, people will break and breach, and there'll be consequences, or we'll accept it because we feel terrible at ourselves. So working on your self-esteem, realizing that every single person is a masterpiece, it kind of blows my mind a little bit that people don't connect with that. Like every single human being is a fingerprint, and Mother Nature is pretty impressive. You know, you just have to look around you and think, look at how our whole world, our ecosystem works, how we all live together quite harmoniously. And then imagine that every single one of us was given a fingerprint. It's individual and unique. That's not because we're meant to be like the next person. It's not meant to be that we're in competition with the next person. It's that we are totally brilliant at being ourselves. So I think that when we talk about self-esteem and self-growth and development, the more that we can focus in on amplifying our positives and amplifying what we desire and demand and feeling unashamed and unapologetic about having those needs and wants and desires and looking at ourselves, like I said, as that masterpiece, then suddenly it's less scary to be who we are. And it's also more acceptable to be demanding of what we want. So I would argue that where self-esteem and value comes into play is that if you have a negative self-image, if you have a negative self-belief system, then expect others to reinforce that, because they're not going to do anything to increase your levels of self-esteem. That's for you to do. But they may well accept the level that you're projecting and treat you accordingly to that projection. And that's something that we don't want to do.
And I think in saying all of that, it's as though we can view ghosting, when it's handled appropriately, as more of a positive tool for self-preservation when it comes to things like dating and relationships. And so was there any strategies or communication techniques that you think can help reduce the negative impact of ghosting, and ways that people can approach it in a healthier way and sort of view those experiences in a positive way to help with self-preservation?
I mean, first of all, it's really difficult in life when people say, don't take it personally. Because you're like, well, it's about me. They're ghosting me. And it's like, no, but don't take it personally, because statistically, a huge amount of people are ghosted. So it isn't a you thing. It's definitely a them thing. It's a poor way of dealing with a situation that they can't confront or deal with. Mm-hmm. Secondly, don't amplify it, because you may think they ghosted you for 150 reasons, but actually they just ghosted you because they were speaking to a few other people and actually they're not really that bothered about dating right now. So you build a story that's false. It's based on something you've created in your head. So change that and be like, oh, it's just somebody moving on, moving forward, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, if you can feel that it's affecting your mental health and well-being, it's okay to take a break. Obviously, you're not going to do that permanently. Seeking a soulmate is a really virtuous thing to do. It's a good thing to do, but sometimes you'll need a little bit of space and time to just kind of debrief and go and vent to your friends, because this is why our friends come in, to remind us of how great we are, and equally to remind us of how terrible they are. And that can be really healthy and really helpful. And don't be embarrassed. That's another thing that I think really affects people with mental health. Don't be ashamed when somebody does to you what they've done to everybody else. Everybody has a story like this. You know, you may think that it's only happening to you, but the more you're able to just have those conversations and honestly own the fact that this stuff happens, the more it becomes less of a big deal and more of a dating deal. And that's okay.
Oh my God, 100%. And I think that's what I love the most about having a podcast, where I get to speak to people like you and have these open and honest conversations about stuff that people, especially in the past, have found quite challenging. And I think there's so many cool women and people out there having these honest conversations and encouraging others to do the same. Like, I've received messages from listeners, and hi, if you're out there listening, saying, you know, I was always really ashamed of this certain thing that happened to me, but now I can see the funny side thanks to your podcast, or I can see, you know, I've shared it with people at dinner parties now, because it is just like, it's like, if you can poke fun at yourself, or at least look at things objectively and be like, do you know what? That actually was, like, it might be a source of shame, but also, like, those stories are the pinnacle of humor. Like, they're, like, so unique and so funny. And it doesn't have to just be about comedy and humor. It can also just be about human connection. And if you're talking to the girls and being like, oh my God, I rang this guy 10 times last night, I don't know what happened to me, then they're all like, mate, same, like, I did that too, you know? So I think open and honest conversations can really help us create an understanding culture when it comes to dating.
Absolutely, 100%. And also just that sense of, often the thing about expressing a feeling and just having that conversation with somebody and being real about something happening to you is, like you said, it gives other people permission to do the same. But also it really helps to recalibrate the way that you feel. It kind of desensitizes you to it. The more you tell a story, the less the story has power, if that makes sense.
So true. It halves every time, they say. Really, like, if you tell someone about your grief or, you know, a bad experience, it halves each time, and then it just becomes
part of your fabric.
Yeah, it's who you are. Yeah.
And also I think that, you know, with the ghosting situation in particular, it's one of those things that everybody relates to, because it doesn't have to just be in dating. It's happened somewhere at some point to every single one of us.
Job interviews, just, like, oh my God, you know, recruiter never gets back to you.
And that thing about rejection teaches you to be stronger and be more accepting. I mean, it really does. I just find them. I don't think you learn a lot of things in the good times. I kind of think when things are a struggle, that's a really good lesson. And also I think that looking for your soulmate, and this is what people are doing, and that's why it feels so big sometimes. You know, that's why Plenty of Fish exists, because people are genuinely invested in finding somebody of great meaning. So the pursuit, and this is what kind of annoys me sometimes about people's perspectives, because it can seem trite. It can seem just part of the natural course of nature in the modern day to use the internet and to use digital dating and stuff. But actually, when you draw back from that and you think, well, what is this about? You know, for most people who do it, it's about the pursuit of love. It's about the pursuit of commitment. It's about
it's like a human truth. Like, it's a human thing
together,
to want.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
the
yeah.
most important role you're ever gonna interview for, and that is how we should see it, you know. It's the biggest role that anyone's gonna play in our life. And I think that when people are surprised about the investment and the sadness and the joy that people feel that's interlinked with this, to me it just makes perfect sense, because you genuinely are seeking something, both spiritual, emotional, psychological meaning. And it's profound.
And physical. So it's really, because it, like when it comes to sex and stuff, it's like it encompasses every huge part of who you are, you know. And that's not to say that you can't be whole on your own, but it's like adding to every aspect of your life, you know. I think
you can be whole on your own. You can. Yeah. Absolutely. But you can also feel that life is a journey, and yeah, that journey is often better shared. It really mm-hmm. is. Like every piece mm-hmm. of literature that we've got states that, yeah, you know, there is nothing yep. bad about if you want to spend your life by yourself. Great, whatever works for you. Yep. But that's not really how humans are built. And it's certainly not what the literature tells us in research. You know, what we know is that when you work solidly on a relationship and you commit it and it's lasting a long time, you're going to be happy and happier. It doesn't mean it doesn't come without its conflict. Of course it does. That's just life, yeah, isn't it? Like, that's why the ghosting thing is painful to some degree. It's like,
yeah,
because people have set on a journey.
Yeah, and you make up a future for yourself,
right,
where you see it going and stuff, and then when that falls through, it's like being broken up yeah. with, when you see a yeah. future in your head and then you're like, whoop, the rug's been ripped out like from underneath yeah. you.
But I love, you know, one of the things that I love as well that I think is a positive is that because of that feeling, you know, when people are like, oh, that really hurts, that's bruised me, mm. that's because secretly, beneath all the insecurity, beneath some of the problems with self-esteem, there is a bit of you that's like, I'm awesome.
Yeah.
And you should not ghost me. And it's almost like we should be able to amplify yeah. that part of ourselves, because what we're saying when we're feeling hurt and a bit broken is, you have no idea who I really am. And you are like,
you're
the
missing
chance.
Out.
Right. And that's yeah. really important to amplify as well. So yeah. I definitely think that even within people who really struggle with yeah. their confidence, there's a little bit of them in there that's
definitely.
Like, I'm
so otherwise
awesome.
Otherwise you would just roll over and be right. like, yeah, fair enough, of course. Yeah. But when you're pissed off, you're sort of like, well, yeah, it's because I yeah. am great. And then
that's
like
right.
that little fire inside you that is like fighting for you
exactly.
and like knows that you're worth it. So yeah, that's such an awesome point. And working with Plenty of Fish and in your work as a psychologist, can you share any success stories where people have used ghosting as an opportunity for personal growth or dating experiences?
I mean, pretty much anybody who's ever come to therapy to look at confidence, relationship work,
okay,
even couple work, because often we carry the scars from our past into our future.
Yes,
it's always involving yep. a sense of ghosting, mm-hmm. abandonment, a sense of being left behind, a sense of not being valued, a sense of not being cherished. So I think that a big component of our work in therapy is always relational. And that's partly to do with the self. You know, how do I feel about me? And what is it about me that makes me believe that that person who abandoned me or rejected me or didn't have time for me in the long term, is it because really I'm this terrible human being, or is it that they've seen something within me that's broken? And actually my job is to help them realize that they're absolutely enough as they are, and that those experiences that they've had, the fractures they've created, it's scar tissue, it heals in a more strong way. And if you work through it and work towards something greater, then arguably it's had its part in your life. And I'm a big believer in teaching my clients that suffering is really potent and suffering is really integral and essential. And the more you can kind of welcome it as opposed to reject it, the more you're able to process it. Because there are no good experiences, there are no bad experiences, there are just experiences that we apply a notion of belief to.
The black and white, like what we spoke about before.
Right.
That's it. The yin and the yang, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a deconstruction of those feelings.
Yeah.
As opposed to the attaching the feelings and letting them be carried. But yeah. every single client has had abandonment issues, and every single client has felt hurt.
It's a part of life, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. the difference is, as opposed to them holding on to it, it's about teaching them to let go. And, yeah. and we use that, again, that's a trite way of stating something that's really profound, because I think we say the words let go all the time. Let go of it. And like no one gives you the A to B with that. Well, what does that mean? What
and the tools to do that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like, well, I'd like to let go of it because it feels really awful, but I don't know how to, because it seems to be stuck in me.
And you're like, it's really heavy. I want to put it down.
Yeah, like, I feel
where
sick
do I put it?
When I think about it. Yeah.
yeah
so
yeah,
it's
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of helping people to deconstruct that. And to rethink what that means and why it sits there. And usually it's an emotional prompt. It's taking you somewhere great. So you just have to listen to whatever it's teaching you. Like the classic situation is, you know, when you're afraid, you're not really being taught to be afraid, are you? You're being taught to be courageous.
To be brave.
You're being taught to be brave, right? Yeah. So it's all those. It's emotional prompts are always that. When you're angry, you're being taught to be soothed and calm. But often we hold on to those attachments as opposed to letting them go.
But I love that so much. I've never heard anyone put it so eloquently, like when you're angry, you're learning to be calm. Because that's how you learn, by having those experiences and then, you know, having to push against that and like swim against the current when it comes to those things, because otherwise you're just can get swept away. That's so, that's a really, really great way to put it. And as a psychologist, how do you differentiate between ghosting as a self-protective measure and ghosting as a more avoidant behavior? So I guess this is sort of if someone listening is doing the ghosting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I have definitely ghosted people in the past and I've been ghosted. You know, it doesn't feel great to do either of those things. But when does it come – when does it present itself as more of a self-preservation, self-protective measure when it's you doing the ghosting?
I think, first of all, ghosting comes down to somebody feeling that they haven't got the skills needed to have a difficult conversation. So that is one of the main reasons. And if you don't have the skills to have a difficult conversation, the chances are, unless you just are very rude, because there are a component of people who are just really rude and don't really care about somebody else's feelings.
Yeah.
But for those who feel awkward and like it's difficult and you're going to hurt somebody and you want to avoid it, that usually comes from that place of insecurity within the self. It's a sense of, I don't have the confidence to say what I feel. I feel like it's going to be difficult when I say it. I feel like I'm going to hurt somebody. So what I'd rather do is hurt them without seeing the hurt. But actually, you know it and you're feeling it and you're not growing. You're hiding. So it depends what kind of spectrum on that you are. It could be that whenever you get into a situation where you start getting close to somebody, you get those difficult feelings where you're like, oh, this might turn into something of meaning and I don't know whether I'm ready for that meaning. So as opposed to seeing it through, you'll just ghost them because you started to have challenging experiences on a feelings level. Then there is the other side of it, which is actually every time I get into a situation where somebody seems to be, I don't know, coming on a little bit too strong, getting to that point where they actually want to meet me, that's when I'm kind of turning it down and removing them. Again, that would say, so commitment issues or starting to feel a little bit like things are getting real and you're not necessarily in a place and zone where you really want that relationship, or you might be, but you're not going to allow yourself to get to that position. So those are reasons why you might fundamentally ghost. I think when it becomes a little bit more like pathological and you're just avoiding it full stop, maybe it's to do with the fact that you're not ready to date. What you are wanting to do is have validation and value off another human being. So essentially you get into a habit of connecting and communicating, you enjoy the experience, but then when it moves to something that could have meaning, you want to run a million miles away because you're not doing it today. You're doing it just to validate who you are and the fact that you're attractive and the fact that people are interested in you and the fact that you can have, but that you don't really want. And so because they're all kind of things that are about you, you don't think about necessarily the impact on them. You just want to run in the direction that means that you can get far away from them and get away from the awkwardness of the situation feeling.
And I guess if you're someone that does ghost people or has ghosted people in the past, it's a good opportunity for self-reflection, and it's a good opportunity to take a look and find a deeper meaning for why you might be doing those things, which is, you know, could be to do with any of the things you've just
spoken
about.
And it can also be that you just don't like the person that you're chatting to.
Yeah.
But you should so still true. Have that conversation, because there have been situations in life where somebody will be getting on with you and then they'll say something that you just like, I mean, I remember I went on one kind of blind date and within the first 10 minutes, something he said, it was just so inappropriate. And it was something really from the 1980s. Oh, that's all I can say. It was homophobic. And he had no idea about my own family, had no idea about who I was. And I was like, this is so wrong, you know? And I ended up kind of afterwards, when he got in touch with me and wanted to have another date, just saying to him that the only thing we had in common was that we had kids that went to gymnastics, because genuinely that was true. But it was like, I needed to like let him know he wanted another date. And I was like, how are you so not connected in this world?
Deluded. Yeah.
Right. But if I ghosted him, he would never have realized that what he said was inappropriate. And then he might have done that again. So I also think that when you ghost someone because they annoy you, you should tell them. And it's not because they have to take it on. They can be like, well, she's a dick. But you know, at least if you tell them, they may not fall in the same hole the next time, because people do repeat patterns. You know, people do things and say things that are stupid and offensive, and a lot of people don't pick them up. And actually, I'm sure that he probably wasn't some horrendous human being. The comment that he made came from an ill-informed, ill-judged place. But I needed to express that because he should definitely not say that to anybody again. So I think that you also don't help the person that might be a bit of an ass when you don't let them know. So ghosting, it's avoidant. It tends to be because you don't have the courage or that you have a lack of care. But the other big thing is that you don't want that difficult conversation with somebody who's offended you. It's like, just tell them the truth, because that actually could be something that will lead them on.
That constructive criticism can be really helpful. It and really also, I guess it's like, it's sort of the same as the argument, like, you can block out everyone in your life that has a different opinion to you and, you know, not try and like come closer to people with different political or social opinions than you. But then if you take it on yourself to like have conversations with people and be courageous, and then maybe that's how the world can be changed, and people can, rather than being so far right or so far left or, you know, having completely opposing views, people can actually find that gray area in the center where, you know, there's some sort of synergy. So maybe having the courage to have hard convos.
It's so interesting what you were just saying though about the difference of opinions and the disparity of those opinions and how that separates people, because there's so much more that connects us. Like every human being, if you actually sit with another human being, it doesn't matter what they come from, as far as that home life through to their education, through to their political persuasion. If you actually sit down and talk about normal things, pretty much 99% of the time, you'll all want exactly the same. And yet, like you said, often we'll avoid somebody or we'll ghost somebody because they don't necessarily fit with the 1% of something that's important to us. But 99% of stuff that is important to you. It's like, it's crazy, like food, that we do that.
Food, love, connection, shelter. Like everyone just wants to be happy. Everyone wants their family and friends to be safe. Like I think if we could like connect over the 99%, but then the things that people argue about is what gets the most media, the most press. It's what people want to post about on social media because it's interesting and there is those differences there. But then I suppose maybe that 99% is more just your daily life. So it's not, you know, no one's posting their salad on Insta anymore. Everyone wants to talk about like stuff that, you know, is engaging. But
you said, 99% of our life is going to be spent sat across the table knowing whether we can connect and chat with this person and also paying the bills. No one's going to be walking in and saying, can I just know my political opinion about this morning? It's like people are going to be like, the school run, make sure the car's got petrol in. That's where the actual importance lies. And somebody who you can do that with is really powerful. So, I think you're right. I think that probably to add into the ghosting thing that you were talking about before, the other part is, when somebody really does disagree with one aspect of something that you might find important and they ghost you over that, is such a shame. And it's the same if you're the kind of person who thinks, oh, this person has just said they're anti-vax, for example, right? Why should that stop you getting on? That's just so sad.
It's one point of view. I suppose it's similar to like when we're talking about cancel culture, and obviously we're talking about Matty Healy before, and he I think is great at the thing is, people are so multifaceted and they have so many different nuanced opinions. And just because you might be anti-vax doesn't mean that you're not like pro-choice or something. It's just like people have
super healthy. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So it's sort of like, it's interesting that people can get cancelled for one thing, but then they can be offering so much value in another area. And it's like, we should view people as whole beings rather than maybe if they say one wrong thing.
Exactly. And what would happen if you maybe didn't carry out that ghosting behavior that you would archetypally do and you just saw what happened next?
Yeah.
And that's probably the best thing, isn't it? To think, okay, well, this is what I always do. And that ends up with me not being with the person of meaning. So maybe I could just think about another opportunity
and how you present
on
yourself.
That.
Yeah.
Right. Even have a discussion, like you said, like right back and be like, oh, cool. Well, I feel like this. And see how that is. Because then that gives you an opportunity to look at your conflict styles and imagine.
It doesn't have to be negative either.
Right.
It can be like, it can be interesting. Like me and my ex, we had quite different political standpoints or points of view. And it kind of made for great discussion where I could teach him about, you know, different cultures or like different ways of seeing things, and then he could show me, and then we sort of came, like, we just agreed to disagree on stuff, but it wasn't in like a negative or a toxic way. It was actually really healthy. We're broken up now. Don't like him anymore, but like, you know what I mean? It was actually it was quite interesting. Made dates really fun as well, because you go out and then you end up just like shouting across the table a bit. in like a healthy
way. Well, like
way.
Compatibility doesn't have to be that you agree with the subjects that you agree with. Compatibility, which is one of the key reasons people have long-lasting relationships, is just that you get on whilst you're doing or discussing or carrying out certain actions together. It's like it's we've got to a point where we've minimized to such a degree, you know, what's important. We're forgetting that the maximizing is what makes us happy. You know, like human beings are just multifaceted and multivariable, and you never stop learning about yourself. So why would your partner ever stop learning about themselves? And that means you're evolving and changing. And the core thing is, do I find them attractive? Do we seem to have, you know, an ability to have banter together? Right, let's go for a coffee and see what happens. It doesn't matter that they disagree with me on A, B, or C, you know?
Yeah. And like we said, no one's going to remember anyway. So
no, exactly. Well, my husband was a meat eater. You know, I've not ate meat my entire life. You know, my husband was a meat eater.
Yeah.
When he wanted to have chicken, I wasn't like, that's it. There's no way we're going to be together. Like, he doesn't eat meat now. You know, he decided in the long term that that wasn't going to be okay for him anymore. Uh-huh. But that was because I softly and gently introduced him to a world of possibilities without it.
Yeah.
And I'm a good cook. So, you know, feed him. There you go.
He's getting jealous.
But he now... like became something that if I forgot to acknowledge change, you know, he didn't need to change. You know, he could have carried on eating meat his entire life. I would never have enjoyed him doing that, but it would be okay because he's a great guy. Imagine just rejecting somebody who's a great person because they don't fit my paradigm of perfect. Like, my paradigm of perfect is impossible anyway. You know, I'll always find something else to make it more perfect. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I guess it's just great to have an open mind, and even outside of romantic relationships or whether it's to do with dating apps, it's, you know, just having an open mind and realizing there's more to people than meets the eye and more than you discuss on the surface level as well. Like people have depth and finding that. I really love that we've brought it back to that finding a gray area between the black and white. Like it's not always like positive or negative. Sometimes things can be both. So
thinking is terrible thinking. You should always be in the gray area, definitely, because
if you have
all or nothing, you tend to have nothing a lot, you know, whereas if you, like you said, you go for the gray area, that's where all the exciting stuff lies. And that's why everybody should really consider when they get ghosted, when they get into that situation where they feel like things haven't worked out how they wanted them to work out. Good, because that's life.
Yeah.
Get used to it. That's okay. The pursuance of just continuing in spite of that, the perseverance, that's what will give you the rewards. So every knockback should be something that you're like, that's a great thing. It's just another little lesson in my life. And it's another thing that says, I really want this. Because, you know, when you carry on going, in spite of things not working out, you know you really want it. And if there's one thing that's worth fighting for in life more than anything else, it's the pursuit of love. It really is. And it's just the most wonderful gift when it arrives. So why should it be easy? Why should it be easy, you know?
100%. Oh, Emma, it's been so amazing chatting with you, and thank you so much for jumping on the podcast.
Pleasure.
Hopefully I'll see you at Reading in the crowd. We'll be moshing to Maddie.
How great is that? I'm really jealous of you.
Yeah,
really jealous.
Yeah, thank you.
But Leeds is closer to me, so that would be where I'd be in the rain.
You'll be up in Leeds in the rain. I'll be down here in sunny, tropical London.
I know. It's
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Emma. Please let me know on my socials if you have any stories or thoughts of your own to share. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.